Well, peace, friends. My name is Tom, and let me reintroduce myself to you. I'm your pastor. Hi, Tom. I've been on sabbatical for 3.5 months. It's a sabbatical that didn't go as planned. Many of you who've been around here for a while are aware that the month before I went on sabbatical, my wife was diagnosed with breast cancer. It was caught very early. Her first mammogram ever, stage one. But a little bit later on, we found that after genomic testing, it was kind of an aggressive cancer. And so she had to go through chemo, and about a little over halfway through that right now. Maybe we always want to know, how's Sarah doing? Overall, she's doing really well. She's not doing very well right now because she's in that cycle of chemo where, you know, you feel crappy for about 7 to 10 days, and then you start to feel well again about when you're back to yourself, then you feel crappy again. And so she's not here with us this morning. My sabbatical didn't start out as planned. It also didn't end as planned. The second day after I was back on the job, my dad died in Indianapolis. He had been struggling with dementia for many years, and in many ways it was an answer to prayer. He died peacefully in his sleep, caught all of us unaware, even the hospice nurse. Contrary to the way he lived the rest of his life, he went out peacefully. And so last weekend I was there leading my family in that funeral. The sabbatical, like I said, didn't go as planned. We're still in the woods. I'm still in the wilderness in some ways. Sarah's halfway, a little over halfway through the chemo. She has one more treatment. But what I'd like to do today, this is normally like, you know, when I give a message and a sermon, and I'm going to do something just a little bit different with it today. What I want to take the time that I'd usually preach, and I want to testify. I'm going to give my testimony, so to speak, and about how God has shown up over the summer in the midst of this. And the question I really want to wrestle with this morning is this question: does God care? Does God? That's a question I found myself asking this summer. Does God care? And what I'd like to do this morning is I'd like to testify to hope. Testify to a hopeful answer to that question. Peter, one of Jesus' closest followers, said this: always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. The hope that you have that God cares. Now, we're supposed to be wrapping up a series right now called Contagious Life. It's not about being contagious in the bad way, you know, that you pass germs back and forth, but rather contagious in the sense that your life is compelling and it's contagious to others. And so there was a sermon that I was supposed to preach today, and I'm not really going to preach it, but I am going to give you the Cliff Notes version of it, okay? And it's actually going to tie back into the testimony. The sermon today was about inviting. And Jesus said, this is like one of his last words he said. He said, go and make disciples of all nations. Go. It's a command. It's not a suggestion. And it's not just for the professional clergy. Jesus had followers. He had fishermen. He had accountants, tent makers, you know, the whole gamut of people. They're just sort of normal, regular people. And Jesus says, go and make disciples of all nations. One of the ways that we do that here is with these invest and invite cards. And so when you came in, take that out with me just for a minute. Normally what I tell you is I tell you to write 3 names on these and invest in those relationships and then pray for God to open a door for you to invite those people to church. And I'll tell you what, it's kind of crazy when you pray how God opens doors. I have somebody on my list who I saw this past week, and they brought up coming to church in a pub next or tomorrow without me even inviting them. There's some amazing things that happen in this. Now, normally I tell you to just write 3 names, but I want to give you some sort of categories to think about when it comes to those names. And this was the sermon that I was going to talk about in much more depth than I'm going to do right now. The first kind of invitation is, let's call it a drive-by invitation, all right? These are like the people that you just bump into, the barista, the cashier. Now, if you're an introvert, these are like really hard to to do this sort of invitation. People like Jeremy, who's an extrovert. Jeremy can, like, within 15 seconds know the person's name. They know that he works at a church. He can make them feel encouraged for being alive today, and then invite them to church, like, all in, like, 15 seconds. They never actually show up, though, so what does that say about... that's a drive-by, okay? Now, one of the ways that that works for me is just, like, making sure that I'm with the same cashier at the grocery store every time, you know, and getting to know that person's name and just being genuinely concerned and curious about who this person is. And then praying for God to open the door for you. That's the first kind. The second kind of invitation, so the second line you would write is a developing relationship. This isn't somebody that you've known forever. It's a friendship that's been developing maybe recently, or maybe even over the last year or two. For me, that's the second person on my list. It's somebody I know through the gym that I've been working out with for a couple of years now. It's not somebody that I've known forever, but it's a developing relationship. Now, the third one, and this is where it starts to tie into my testimony, is difficult. I don't mean difficult people, but difficult times, all right? People who are going through difficult or distressing situations. And that would be my life this last summer. And on some level, you may be here today going through a difficult or challenging time, a distressful time. And that it's in those moments where people are particularly open to spiritual things, particularly open to the work of God in their life. Again, like my wife and I and my family this summer. Here's my wife, Sarah. This is her gypsy chemo look. I said, can I show this picture? And she said, you really want to show that one? And I said, yeah, you look really great in that picture. You know, I look at her and I get, like, all starry-eyed seeing her there. Of course, she got diagnosed with cancer right before I went on sabbatical. It's been going through chemo through the summer that I've been on sabbatical. And one of the things that I didn't take into account when I was planning sabbatical, whether I certainly didn't plan on Sarah getting cancer, but I also didn't really take into account what it was going to be like to be on sabbatical with little children in the house. Because I gave up kind of working here every day for basically working at home every day, being a full-time parent and full-time caregiver. And I gained an appreciation for what full-time parents do, because there are some tasks that are like mind-numbing drudgery that just, they cycle. It's cooking, dishes, laundry, cooking, dishes, laundry, cooking, dishes, laundry, cooking, dishes. I mean, it's relentless. It's never ending. It's never ending. And so, Sycamore Creek, will you give it up for parents here today? Like, for the single parents and the work all day parents and the come home and work all night parents. And, you know, parenting is tough. Well, I sat down with Sarah at the end, in the bedroom the other day, and I said to her, you know, I think one of the things that the sabbatical gave me, whenever things hit that don't go as planned or tragedy hits, there are doors that open that weren't open before. And in the midst of it, it's really hard to see it. But when you get a little bit of distance from it, you start to see it. And one of the things that was kind of a gift this summer to me in the midst of that forcing me to be the parent all the time is I became a better parent. You have more reps at it, like, and so you know, like, how to deal with it, and I am a little more patient because I just, you know, it happens every day, and then, you know, you just get used to it. Now, in the midst of the drudgery and the cancer and the chemo, I started to think back on the story of Job. You all are familiar with Job in the Bible. He had everything that the world could offer in his day and age, and within a couple of days, it was all taken from him. Except for his wife, who wasn't particularly helpful in that moment, because she told Job to curse God and die. Now, Sarah is no Job's wife. She never told me to curse God and die. But I am no Job. I cursed at God more this summer than probably in the entire combined life before that. So there was cooking, cleaning, and dishes, cooking, cleaning, and laundry, cooking, cleaning, and laundry. And in the midst of that came cancer, chemo, and cursing, cancer, chemo, and cursing, cancer, chemo, and cursing. And if I said out loud the things that I said to God this summer here, you might not all come back next week. Now, one of the things that I did this summer, which was both kind of a blessing and a curse, was I deactivated my Facebook account. On some level, like, there's a lot of really stupid stuff that happens on social media that you can just waste a ton of time. It was really good to disconnect from all of that. And there's no way to put an autoresponder on Facebook that says, I'm not paying attention to Facebook. And so I didn't want people to think like, well, I messaged him on Facebook and he hasn't responded. So I deactivated. But the other thing that Facebook does is it really connects you. There are some real ways that it connects you. Social media does that. Now, if you were paying attention, or if you sort of are part of that whole world, you may have noticed that the Facebook account got deactivated, but I did keep posting to Instagram. And here's a lesson about social media, okay? Social media is a highlight reel of people's lives. You see all of the highs, and there were some high highs this summer, but you don't see any of the low lows. So if you were paying attention to my Instagram page, you would have seen moments like this, where Micah and I spent a week in the UP backpacking through Pictured Rocks. You would have seen my family get on a train and take 4 days out to San Francisco and live in this teeny little space and have a blast. You would have seen us when we were finally out of San Francisco to the Golden Gate Bridge. You would have seen Sam and I over a long weekend in Detroit, biking along the river trail and biking all around Belle Isle. And then you would have seen a moment when we went up to Boyne City to Sarah's parents, and this iconic moment at the top of Avalanche Mountain looking out over Lake Charlevoix. That's the highlight reel of social media, okay? But what that doesn't show is the cooking, the dishes, and the laundry. The cooking, the dishes, and the laundry. The cancer, the chemo, and the cursing. The cancer, the chemo, and the cursing. Don't believe for a second that all of those like pictures of people on cruise ships and sitting on beaches and drinking drinks with their friends, that if you wouldn't scratch just a little bit below the surface, that person is going through some difficult time. Because you wouldn't have seen it on my social media page. Now, in the midst of that, again, I found myself asking this question. Does God care? Does God listen? Peter, Jesus' follower, says, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. Now, generally, like when I've dealt with issues of suffering or evil from up front here, I've given you a kind of biblical or theological answer to that. And it goes something like this. It starts with the idea or basic trust that God is good. And in the midst of that goodness, why we can trust God is because God in his goodness didn't choose to stay separate from our suffering, but chose to enter into the world in the person of Jesus to take on flesh and blood and to suffer with us. God didn't leave us alone in our suffering. Now that's a great 10,000 foot like biblical theological answer, but when you are going through cancer, chemo, and cursing, you want to know not whether God cares, but does God care for me? For me. There's two ways that answer or that question got answered this summer. There's communal ways. And there's really personal ways for me, and I want to share a little bit of each of those. The communal answers to that question was that in the midst of cooking and dishes and laundry, food showed up for many of you. You know, I put pretty high walls up around me over sabbatical, and some of you like found ways to catapult over those walls and to dig under them and to blow up the walls to show us support. Food would show up on the weeks that Sarah and I had chemo. Our kids were taken care of. In fact, sometimes for unexpectedly long times. Bill Vleek signed up for 3 hours one day, which turned into like 12 hours because we had an unexpected trip to the emergency room when Sarah developed a blood clot in the arm where she has a PICC line. And then the kids got transferred to the Wassingers, Aaron, who was up here hosting, overnight because we got out at midnight. Those were moments where you were God's answer to us, that God cares for me, for Sarah, for our boys. There were the notes, the letters, the texts, the prayers. Now, I learned several things by being on the other side of receiving care. One thing I learned is that we can't just care for our pastor like this. We need to care for each other. But I also learned that you have to ask for help for care. When you're hurting, you've got to express it. You've got to say, I need some help, and then be really explicit with that. But another thing that I learned is that one phrase that we use a lot in our culture these days is this phrase, thoughts and prayers. And that's better than nothing. But I want to share with you like a way that someone took that a step further that really spoke to me in a powerful way. It was actually Paul McCrum. Paul's on presentation today in the back there. And yesterday, Paul texted me a prayer, and I asked him if I could share this with you. And it would have been really easy for Paul to just say, Tom, my thoughts and prayers are with you tomorrow. But instead, here's what he did. He didn't even say anything. This is just how the text starts. It's right in. I got this text. He said, most gracious God, he's not even talking to me. He's talking to God through technology to me. Most gracious God, thanks for this nice weather. Thank you for the wonderful friends of Tom and Sarah. Please give Sarah strength and healing. Please give Tom the words to speak in his sermon tomorrow. Help people get something out of it. In Jesus' name, amen. Now that's a prayer. It's not fancy words. It's simple words. And he didn't tell me that he was praying for me. He actually prayed for me. So if my sermon is good this morning, you give Paul a high five, okay? Because it was an answer to his prayer yesterday. That was the communal answer to this question, does God care? But there were some personal answers that I want to share as well today. And I want to share just a couple. There are so many that I could share about ways that God showed up this summer. I narrowed it down to three at the sermon preview group, but that sermon was like 50 minutes long, so I've sort of shrunk it down today to even two. That's all the time that I can share today. Although if you stick around for the sabbatical town hall afterwards, I'm sure more of it will come out. But to understand these moments where God showed up for me, you have to understand a bigger context, and that is that the period that I'm in is not just one that has lasted over the summer. It's actually been a period of trial that's been the longest and most enduring season of trial that I've ever been in, and it's been about 2 years long. It started on December 26th of 2016 when one of my best friends, Bill Copeland, lost his son Everett when a construction truck brake gave out, rolled down the hill, and hit Everett in the driveway of their house and killed him almost instantly. Everett was about Micah's age, just a little bit below. And I'm not sure that I've really gotten over that. I'm still grieving the loss of Everett. One of my mentors talks about being in a cluster event where you have one tragedy that hits and then the second tragedy hits like so close on the heels that you don't have time to process the first, and then a third tragedy hits and you know can't process the first two, and then a fourth and a fifth and so on. And I'm in a cluster event right now that started with Everett. Now, my dad had been diagnosed with dementia before Everett's death, but it was right about then that his functioning particularly started to deteriorate. And it was also shortly after Everett's death that My stepmom, his primary caregiver, was diagnosed with stage 4 ovarian cancer. And so the question became, how are we going to care for Dad? Now, my dad's dementia showed itself primarily in two symptoms, paranoia and delusion. So as you're trying to help him, he thinks that you're actually trying to gang up on him to take away everything that he holds dear. This all culminated last fall in a period of about 2 weeks where my dad attempted suicide twice, once while I was there at the house. He was put in a psychiatric ward. While he was in the psychiatric ward, my stepmom decided it was finally time to go to court and to get a court order for guardianship over him. He was not going to submit to this in any way. Now, she had to do all of this while she was going through cancer, chemo, and cursing. Cancer, chemo, and cursing, and court orders for your husband to have guardianship over him. It was probably one of the worst days of my life happened in that two-week period where my dad and I didn't act well. He didn't act well. I mean, it was both of us at our worst. It was a particularly challenging day. Now, she was giving guardianship of him that passed on to me and to my sister when my stepmom died in January of this year. Now, last June, while I was visiting them, I was in a car accident, totaled my car. I never saw it coming. Have you been in a moment where that, where the airbag goes, and it's like it takes like 10 or 15 seconds to even figure out what just happened? The car came out from the right, and I didn't even see it until like it's backing away from me to get out of the street, and my airbag blew. And so the next day I had to rent a car in Indianapolis to drive back here to Lansing. And if you've ever been in a situation like that, you know, you're kind of like on edge getting back in a car. Like you're aware of how many things that you're not aware of and how like danger could kind of hit you at any moment. And that became kind of a symbol for me of something even bigger, that not only was I walking around kind of with a flinch in a car, but I was walking around with kind of a spiritual flinch, when's the next thing going to hit me? And then it did. The month before I was to go on sabbatical, my wife was diagnosed with cancer. Hello, God. Listen to me. Are you up there? Do you care? Are you paying attention? Come on. Swear word, swear word, swear word. Cursing, cursing, cursing. Now, I told you that I want to testify to hope today, okay? But we've got to go deep before we can get to hope. Does God care? There are two ways that God showed up this summer, personally. One, you got to understand a certain practice that I have of prayer each day. One of the last things that I do before I go to bed every night is I go into my boys' room and I pray for them. I kneel at the altar of their bed and I offer them up to God. I pray a kind of basic prayer that's the same for both, or that's the same for each one. It's different for both of them, but it's just kind of dependent on their personality. You know, you don't pray the same thing for each kid. Mike is my oldest son. He's the firstborn rule follower. I'm a firstborn rule follower as well. We named Micah after the prophet Micah in the Bible. Micah 6:8 is his theme verse. We've written it on the side post of his door. It says, "What does the Lord require of you but to do justice and to love mercy and to act humbly with your God?" Now, being a firstborn rule follower myself, I know that sometimes justice demands bending the rules a little bit. And sometimes when you're faced with unjust laws, it means breaking the rules, breaking the laws. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "An unjust law is no law at all." And for a firstborn rule follower to be willing to act justly in those situations and to love God fully, it takes confidence. confidence in who God has made you and who God has called you to. So every night, as I put my hand on Micah's head while he's asleep or on his chest, and I feel his heartbeat, I pray that he would that the blood of confidence would beat through the heart and body of this little boy. Now, Micah's on the top bunk, so I get on my knees for Sam because he's on the bottom bunk. And if Micah is the firstborn rule follower, Sam is the one who wants to know who made the rules so that he can punch him, all right? Sam's not allowed to punch anybody except for Dad. And yesterday, he landed one right in my eye socket, man. I'm surprised. If he was just like a year older, I'd be here with a shiner this morning, okay? I get on my knees and I put my hands on his little body and I pray that God would take all of that verve and spunk and energy and passion and impulsivity and that he would point it towards good and towards justice in the world. Because it takes all of that sometimes when you're faced with injustice and the evil of the world. Now hang on to those prayers with me just for a moment, okay? While I tell you another story. Because this summer, when Sarah was going through chemo, she knew that, you know, when you go through chemo, what's one of the things that happens? Your hair falls out, right? And Sarah decided that instead of waiting for it to fall out, she was going to shave her head. And we'd do it as a party. And so we gathered the boys in the kitchen, and we had fun. We made Sarah a punk rocker. We shaved half of her head. And then we made her Marion Wilson and shaved a mohawk in her head. And the boys watched, and we had a blast. And when it was all done, we had a wig party, and all the kids, and we all put on wigs and took like a million selfies. And Sam is hamming it up in all those. But as Sarah's getting her head shaved, Sam and Micah are sitting there watching. And Sam is getting more and more excited. He says, "I want to have my head shaved too." So when Sarah got done with her head being shaved, we shaved Sam's head. And when we got to the mohawk stage with Sam, he decided that that was where he wanted to stop. And so a couple days later, he went to his first day of kindergarten with a mohawk. That was appropriate. Sorry, Mrs. Wilson. As I went in to pray for Sam that night, I put my hand on that mohawk head and I prayed for all of that impulsivity and all of that passion to be used for good and for justice in the world. It hit me. That prayer had begun to be answered that morning. When Sam and all of his spunk and all of his passion and all of just being himself had, in solidarity with the one who was suffering in our house, wanted his head shaved too. Guess which two firstborn rule followers didn't shave their head that day? In that moment, the glory of God was Sam fully alive, fully himself. I went back right after I prayed for him, and I went out to the living room, and I've got my prayer journal there by my chair, and I wrote it down. You got to keep a prayer journal. You got to keep a journal of some sort, because in the midst of the cancer, the chemo, and the cursing, it's easy to forget the moments when God answers prayers or when God has showed you care, and you got to write this stuff down somehow, or have a memento or token of some way. That reminds you of God's goodness during the cancer, the chemo, and the cursing. Now, the next morning, I woke up and I thought, you know what? Maybe that was just Sam being Sam. Maybe that wasn't really good. You know, the questions start to creep into your head, and you think, maybe we're still stuck in cancer, chemo, and cursing. Well, that morning, Micah was the first one up, and he came out to me as I was in the kitchen, and the first words out of his mouth were, "Daddy, this morning I feel more confident." Hello? Are you up there? Are you listening? Do you care? Always be ready. Be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. That was the first personal answer to that question, does God care? Here's the second one I want to share with you. I need to preface this by telling you, first of all, I'm someone who's kind of skeptical of the whole idea of like God speaking to you through dreams. In fact, I'm somebody who never remembers my dreams. You know when you get one of those really crazy dreams and it's like an acid trip in your brain as you're waking up and you think it like says something about who you are and like the state of the universe and where you fit in it, and you think, I got to write that down and remember to tell my therapist so that my therapist can tell me what that dream means. But then you like within like 20 seconds of thinking that, it's gone. And like the key to the meaning of the universe slipped from your brain, like a Freudian slip from my mouth, you know? So it's gone. So I almost never remember my dreams. And I'm kind of skeptical about God speaking through dreams. I hear people say this, and it happens, and you read it in the Bible, God speaks to people through dreams. But I had a dream on the day that I started back to work. I dreamt of a white wolf. And this white wolf was surrounded by predators. I don't know what the predators looked like. They were very indistinct. The white wolf was very distinct. What I knew or could tell was that the white wolf couldn't get away from the predators. They were taking chunks and bites out of the flesh of this white wolf. And the crazy thing, when I looked closer at the wolf, this was one of the crazy things about this dream. It became more vivid the more awake that I was. Like, I could look at it and see parts that I hadn't noticed before. And so, as I'm awake and I'm looking at this dream that I had, this vision, I started to notice there's no blood on the wolf. They're taking bites out of his skin, but nothing is happening to him. And he can't get away. But the minute that my alarm clock went off for me to get up to start my first day back to work after the sabbatical, the white wolf just walked away. Just walked right out away from those predators. Now, I don't have the gift of the interpretation of dreams, so I thought maybe the best way to get the right interpretation would be to crowdsource it. So I put it out on Facebook, and I shared my dream. I said, what's the interpretation of this dream? Jeremy, never being willing to pass up on a good opportunity for a bad pun, wrote, how will you know unless you never ask? Thank you, Jeremy, for that unhelpful piece of information. One of my skeptical friends reminded me that a dream is just random bits in your brain that your brain's trying to put together when you wake up. One of my sarcastic but very funny friends said, I'm pretty sure this dream means you're a racist. But several of you took the opportunity to try to like say, well, what the symbols meant. Some of you said the wolf was God and the symbols are the predators are unbelievers. The wolf is Christ and the predators are demons. The wolf is me. Some of you said the predators were me as well. It's like I'm fighting with myself. Some of you said the wolf was Sarah and the predators were Sarah's cancer. Right after I got the phone call from about my dad's death, Sarah looked at me and said, maybe the wolf was your dad. And the predators were the dementia. I don't even know that there is one right interpretation of this dream, but what I do know is that the day that I started back to work and the day before my dad died, I dreamt of a white wolf surrounded by predators that were not being able to do any harm to it, and when I was ready to come back to work, the white wolf walked away unscathed. And that encouraged me. God encouraged me through that dream. And I've come back to work in my, it's my mulligan week of coming, like I came back and I worked for 2 days and then my dad died and then the week fell apart. And so then I came back this week. And this week, I came back to work last week ready to work. But this week I came back with a kind of peace and a sort of rest that has eluded me through much of the sabbatical. So here's what I think the interpretation of the dream is. I'm the wolf. You are the wolf. Sarah is the wolf. The wolf is the third line on your investment invite card. The person who's going through that difficult time. That's asking the question, does God care? Does God care? And all shall be well. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you, to give the reason for the hope that you have. Does God care? I want to testify to you today that the answer to that question is yes. Yes. So who do you know who's wrestling with a difficult time? Just underneath the surface of that highlight reel on social media that looks like they've got everything that you have and you've got none of it, but underneath the surface, they're wrestling with a difficult time. Who is that person? Your invitation to them this week might be an answer to their prayer in the midst of cancer, chemo, and cursing. Does God care? Your invitation might be the answer to their prayer. I have a family member who many years ago went through a bankruptcy, a failed marriage, was living back at home with family, and he realized he needed to reconnect with God, and so he started to watch TV Church. And while watching TV Church, he realized, I need a real church. But he felt totally overwhelmed about how to pick a church. And so he said a quick breath prayer. God, show me which church to go to. This is somebody who's going through some serious difficult time. That week, one of his coworkers, never having brought it up before, invited him to church. His coworker was the answer to his prayer. You might be the answer to one of your coworkers' prayers this week. He's been in church ever since, reconnected with God. We've written down some prayers, some names on these cards. Would you take that card out? Would you just hold it up in the air, up to God? Let that be, even if you haven't written a name on it, any names on it, just hold that card up. God, we've written names on these cards. They're names of people that that probably look like everything's good on the surface, but just under the surface, there's some difficult stuff going on. Open the door for us to be an answer to their prayer. Help us walk through. Now, maybe this morning you are here and you've never crossed over that line and said, you know what? God does care for me. God does care for me. Maybe you're standing on the fence. I'm not so sure about this whole Jesus thing. I've been on that fence too. Maybe you've got lots of questions. I've still got a lot of questions too. But this morning, God's worked in your life in some way, is speaking to your spirit and saying, you are my child. God, if there's a person like that here today, help them know your care for them in the person and the love of Jesus Christ. Give us the courage to follow after him. In the name of Jesus, in the power of the Spirit, and all who agreed said, amen. Amen.